Welcome in to another edition of Football 52 with UNC head football coach Ed Lamb. I am Brady Hull. Coach, always good to catch up with you, my friend, on this. We're in March now. Things are moving quickly around here.
They are. Sun's out. Supposed to be in the 60s. Reminding me that spring ball is around the corner. Most teams, I think, have started or will be starting in the next 10 days or so. We kick ours back as far as possible for a few reasons. The weather can be rough in Greeley. We don't have an indoor facility to kind of combat that, and so we want to maximize our time that we're out on the field. And then I like to have, being a player development program, I like to have as much time in the weight room as possible. Some of these guys are gaining, 2 pounds of muscle mass a week. And so if we can kick our spring ball back 5-6 weeks later than some of these other schools that are starting in late February, early March, that's a tremendous advantage for those developmental kids, because they might be 10 to 15 pounds heavier by the time we actually get into spring practice and have a much better opportunity to compete. Because, you've heard me talk about it. We've talked about it, but we will take our lumps with young players. We will believe in our guys, but we will not play small if we don't have to. The big strong guys will play.
Yeah, that's been a point of emphasis, I think, on almost every podcast, or certainly the early podcast, was getting in the weight room and getting these guys going in that regard. So that makes a lot of sense.
We are weight room founded. We are weight room fundamental team. We dedicate more of our allowable NCAA hours per week to the weight room than any school that I'm aware of, any coach that I've worked for. It is our foundational cornerstone.
Coach Winter, as far as dates, do you have dates yet that you can give us as far as spring football for you when you're starting?
Our first practice will be April 7th. Once we get into spring practice mode, we actually have 20 hours per week that we begin to have the players. Right now, currently, we're in an 8-hour per week period of what's called access. So we're lifting about to 4 of those hours and running and or running plays, another 3 to 4 hours, and then we have some limited meeting time as well to take up those 8. Once we get into spring practice, the way I try to do it is to do it exactly like an in-season schedule. So we have film work and lifting and running on Mondays, and then Tuesdays and Wednesdays we have pretty significant practices, almost 90 minutes to 2 hours based on the day. There's meetings and lifts on those days as well, and then Thursday we start to taper, Friday's a walkthrough, and then Saturday's a scrimmage to mimic that type of game atmosphere. And we do that for 3 weeks in a row. Most teams go 5 to 6 weeks of spring practice, much more spread out, the day on, day off kind of deal. I want the boys to get a sense of what that schedule is like during the season and how much you have to organize your academic time, your social life, your spiritual life, the recovery, the sleep, and I want some of our young players to really experience that as close to in-season stress as possible.
So you really, just hearing you, there's been a lot of talk about spring football and moving it to where it's more like an NFL type of thing, where it's OTAs, but you do it, in July or something. What are your thoughts on that, on moving it out of the March-April time of year, but pushing it closer toward the beginning of the actual football season?
I'm super in favor of it, and I think the players will be as well. We would still have a kind of main spring ball during the time that we currently do, kind of leading up to finals, because we do want to work on the contact part of the game, and I would not want to push a significant portion of that contact part of the game too close to the season in the summer. But we would probably save some practices for later in the summer and do some type of OTA environments where it's a little more ramped up than what we would normally do in the summer. The interesting thing to me is that the NCAA kind of just came out with that guidance, like, hey, this is pending and likely to occur, but a bunch of teams have already started spring ball. Yeah. And if I were one of those coaches that had already started spring ball and now I've used up my days that I could have pushed into the summer, I would be saying, no, you got to kick this back a year because you didn't do it in time. Mm-hmm. The NCAA didn't notify those schools in time so that they could be flexible with their schedule. We you know, we probably start later than anyone in the country for our spring practice sessions. So if they do decide to kind of renegade the rule through, I guess it would be an advantage to us because we would have all options.
Yeah, well, I want to keep on the spring football thing. There's a few other things I want to bring to you. You're probably already paying attention to all this stuff, but in the football world. But on the spring thing, I always hear installs, like you're installing stuff. And I think of this like my wife and I are watching some kind of murder mystery show on Netflix. And we started watching it last week. And I said, Brittany, we have to keep watching it or I'm not going to remember what's happening if we wait a week. So we watched a bunch of it last night. I was like, I can't connect all these dots. So that had me thinking of spring football and you guys are maybe installing stuff. And then you're just hoping that everybody retains everything. Because I always hear, you know, repetition. You guys are doing the same things over and over again. How important or crucial is that portion of spring ball? And how often do you see guys like they don't recall everything that you went over, especially young players?
Interesting. So pedagogy or like the science of learning and teaching is something that I'm really into. When I got into the business, most of us, I mean, you know, like Steve Sarkisian, the head coach of Texas now, Kalani Sitake, Aaron Roderick is the offensive coordinator at BYU now. We all played together. And then, you know, so we were, hey, we want to get into coaching. You know what I mean? We discussed those things. But at that time, there wasn't a ton of money to be made in coaching, really. Mm-hmm. Even the big time head coaches, they weren't like, they weren't wealthy like they are now. So you plan to be a teacher. And so I majored in English and, you know, so did Kalani and a lot of the guys we were in teaching type fields. And anyway, so because I was exposed to some of that, I know how important it is. One of the key concepts in pedagogy is the giving students the opportunity to forget something. In other words, not testing them on a subject for a period of time, giving them the opportunity to forget and move on to some other subject material, and then at a later time come back and relearn. That's what's going on with installs. If you have continuity in a program, we all talk about continuity and how important that is. And if you have a system, which we have on offense and defense here, and we can maintain some consistency in what we do, okay, well, when we get to spring practice, there will be an install that will be familiar to most. And the second time they learn that, or the third time, fourth time, fifth time, sixth time for some of these upperclassmen, they will pick up nuances and details that they didn't before. Just like watching a movie, you know, you watch one of the old great movies, there's The Breakfast Club or Shawshank Redemption. Like, I've seen them so many times. Tombstone, I've seen that hundreds of times, maybe.
Yeah.
It is my favorite movie.
It's a great movie.
And then but every time I watch it, I pick up a little something new. And that's what you hope your veterans are doing through these installs, even though it's the same install that they may have sat through several sessions.
Is that like the most important, or is what you said to lead off is, you know, getting guys building up to it in the weight room, getting them used to a certain schedule, balancing, you know, school life, personal life, all that. What's the most important portion of spring ball then?
So for me, the guiding light is to answer the question, how does X or how does blank determine or influence the development potential of our players? And so I will never change on that answer because I'm always going to think of it in that context, but we recruit like it's all about recruiting. We lift like it's all about lifting. We install like it's all about install. We correct video like it's all about correcting video. Like, whatever we're doing at that moment is the most important. Mm. But I can go through each one of those and tell you how we lift and how we grade film and how we teach in a way that is, if not unique, unusual for college football, because for us, it's all about development potential. And so many teams right now are very successful with zero discussion about development potential. I know coaches who kind of know, like head coaches that I talk to, they know my philosophy and we've worked together or something before. And they'll just say, Ed, you know, it's like, it's a good study because I'm all about production. Hmm. And we're not about production in recruiting. We're not about production in early depth chart. We are going to push the biggest, fastest, strongest player to the top of the depth chart for as long as we can during practice, hoping that they will overtake the more productive but smaller, slower, weaker guy. And so that's just how I believe in building it. Now, when it comes to actually game day, you know, if it's, you know, if the smaller, slower, weaker guy is a better, more productive football player, then they're going to play.
I always just think of, like, if I were ever in a coaching, I would have to have a giant whiteboard of all of the things that are priorities. And then you're saying, like, everything's priority number one when you're in it in that moment. And that's wild to me, because there's certain things here just our regular business where I look at. And so this is the most important thing. Without this, we don't have anything. But hearing you, and it makes sense, it's like, yeah, today the most important thing is probably guys getting into the gym and lifting, but the priorities do shift throughout the course of the year.
Several years ago, I came across the software product, Microsoft OneNote. Have you heard of that or been exposed to that?
I've never heard of that, no.
Okay, so OneNote is like a, it has the ability to be kind of an endless whiteboard on screen that you could kind of end up swiping through, but you can have Excel documents within OneNote kind of all on the same screen, and then you can swipe or scroll and have Word documents and PowerPoints. And so I wanted this kind of like everything in one file, one document. But what I found was I had to, like, to really make it as usable as I wanted to make it, I still had to go into all those different software pieces. And so the project kind of fell apart because it wasn't as, the end goal was great. But the work to get there wasn't worth it. And so now I have an Excel, what would be called a workbook, that's made up of worksheets, right? Like most people understand Excel. But each one of the tabs is a different aspect of the program. And it started out with 3 and 4 tabs, and now it's like 24 tabs. And it's like, you know, you've got your spring ball schedule, your fall schedule, your coaching schedule for all those periods, your winter conditioning schedule. Those are just the itineraries, right? And then we have our roster and the scholarship makeup, or the salary. The way the salary cap is distributed is a better way to say it recently, with the way this changes in our ability to scholarship. And it's all like, it's all now on one, in one file, which I love.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of worksheets. I got to scroll across the bottom to find what I need.
I would love to take reference. I would love to take a look at that someday.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to screenshot it and put it out there and say, hey, I've got everything that Ed does every single day. But I'm fascinated by that stuff. Because I always want to dig in, because, you know, following football coaches for so long, a lot of people see headset, play sheet, you know, and, mm-hmm. oh, I get to run a team. Oh, right. I'm calling this play. There's just so many things that we don't even discuss on this podcast that goes into a day-to-day for a head football coach.
And then there are the things that, you know, that wouldn't be practical or even beneficial to have on that. But, like, I try to get into work early and stay late or do work from home, because once I'm there, it's a door open policy, and the players and just kind of stop by at all times, and they're interrupting, so to speak, my day. But that's the most important thing I can do, is to be available for them or coaches. And then we've had another example is we've had some movement on our coaching staff, and JB Hall is now coaching at Wyoming, and so that opened up a special teams position. Eddie Gonzalez, you know how much how critical he is to our program, and has helped us get off and running from day one, because he understands this institution. There's so much institutional knowledge there. He played here. He coached here. He's been now in an administrative role as the DFO, and I've been trying to grow him into kind of a general manager type role. Well, anyway, he became impatient was on the tip of my tongue, but I totally get it, and I respect it. He wants to coach. And he's a D-line guy, and we have a D-line coach. And so he just
Pretty
was
good
kind
one.
Of stuck behind Aaron Fernandez, who I'm loyal to as well, and does a fantastic job. He's an associate head coach. I rely on him for almost everything. Anyway, Eddie Gonzalez accepted a position as a D-line coach at Ithaca College in New York.
Is this just recent?
Just days ago.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
I'm so excited for him.
Wow.
And I started at Division III. Division III is an amazing place to coach and play. It's typically Division III schools have a lot of resources, and coaches also teach, and it's not considered a drain on the university. You know, if we really could dig into the hearts and minds of faculty members at Colorado, CSU, UNC, there are a lot of them that say, why do we have sports? You know, and that, you know, agree to disagree, debate. Well, it's debatable. But at Division III schools, sports really drive enrollment. And all of the kids are full-pay kids. There are no athletic-based scholarships. And so the coaches at Division III schools are very much considered faculty and educators. And there's a real professionalism at the Division III level, which I enjoyed a lot during my time at that level.
Man, that's a little breaking news then. Eddie is...
Yes.
I've been following this team for a long time, back when he played, of course. Talk about a guy that lights up when he talks about your vision with UNC. So, but it makes sense. I mean, he's passionate. Doesn't mean he's not passionate about what you're doing, but he's a D lineman. And at some point, he wants to really get his feet wet there. And that's difficult. So that's one of those feel-good stories where it's like it's not a bad separation at all.
Yeah.
Sad separation. Yeah. It's just, man, we don't have the space right now for you. And you have a really good defensive line coach.
Right. Yeah. And so we've got kind of two, you know, hires to make. And then there's, you know, just the process of hiring a state employee in the state of Colorado at UNC. There's a lot of hoops to jump through. And so we're working through all of that stuff. And that's not something that I would keep on a spreadsheet somewhere because it's just not, it doesn't help anything.
Is this so this is interesting. So you're talking about JB Hall and then we're talking about Eddie Gonzalez, both recently moved on.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot statewide talking about several, and they're like Warren Sapp, they're big name guys that are Hall of Fame dudes that left Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
And there's people freaking out, you know, well, what's going on over there? It's March and you're losing this guy, you're losing this guy, you're losing your defensive coordinator. And you're telling me you've got a couple of those guys leaving. Is this a pretty normal time for position coaches, perhaps, to find those different opportunities?
Yes, it is normal. And as coaches, I want to say this, in both of these guys that I'm talking about leaving here are, in my mind, leaving for vertical moves for their career, and I'm excited for them. And unequivocally, they haven't been pushed out.
Yeah.
You know, there's always opportunities to hire new people and improve program, and change can be good. But I have high concern about losing these two guys that we talked about. You know, in the case of Colorado, and you know, watching, you know, Warren Sapp kick over pylons and Dion pick up behind him, I wonder, you know, was that a mutual decision?
Yeah.
Because when I hear Coach Prime, you know, when I like to listen to press conferences and pay attention to the messaging that's out there, learn from other coaches. And my initial impression just kind of built up through the media, you know, when he was first hired, it was negative, to be honest. And then, but as any time that I've actually heard him talk about human development and being a mentor to young people, he stands for the right things.
Yeah, it seems like it.
And the right things are not, you know, we don't, that's not intimidating to an opponent for your D-line coach to go kicking cones over.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you're not a player anymore. You're a mentor. You're a model of society. And, you know, we don't key cars of people we don't like, and you know, bend backside view mirrors and all that goofy stuff. It seemed ridiculous to me, and maybe I'm just completely talking out of left field.
I was on a field once watching him do that, and I thought, does he do this every game? This is just kind of, it was a little thing, but also a pretty big thing at the same time.
Yeah, it just didn't. Like I said, maybe I don't understand. I mean, you know, Warren Sapp. He's Warren Sapp, you know what I mean? And so, I got a piece of that working for Jim Harbaugh. I would love to be in the same room with Warren Sapp and be like, what was the deal there? What were you doing? What were you thinking kicking over the cones? Give me some insight.
Yeah.
You know, maybe I'm missing out on something. But it just, you know, I'm trying to be open here. And that's the first thing I thought of when I read that Coach Sapp or Warren Sapp was leaving Colorado. I was just like, okay, well, maybe he's not into coaching, or maybe, you know, Dion was like, you know, hey, this isn't how it goes or something like that. I don't know. The only thing I know about him is he was kicking over cones.
You become popular because you're just going over. I'd be the guy that's like, all right, I'm going to try this. It's intimidation. Yeah. I'd kick it over and then be, I'm sorry about that. And then just put it right back up.
Right. Yeah. And I forget what game that was, but it's just like,
When I saw him do it, it was in Fort Collins. It was against CSU, and that was the only time I saw him up.
Oh, is it a game, an every game thing, right?
I think so, because I saw it on social media, too, where everyone's like, oh, he can go kick pylons over somewhere else. Yeah. So I'm like, okay, he does this. This is his thing. He does it every single game. That's kind of what he's becoming known for, which is a weird thing to be known for.
Well, it is, and who picks him up? It's like littering, like... It's bizarre behavior when somebody like purposefully litters something. You're like, whoa, like that's for somebody else to pick up now and deal with?
What? Yeah. Now someone has to put those back up.
It's really sociopathic.
Mm-hmm. Coach, on one more story on Eddie Gonzalez. I have a funny story for you. And when he was playing, there used to be a thing in Denver, and it's a restaurant that's closed down now. I think it was the Blake Street Tavern.
Okay.
And it was, they would basically, the David Platty, the guy that runs the ship over at CU for their athletics and information, he would put this together, and this was for coaches in the area. So UNC coach and a player, a CSU coach and a player. And it was Air Force. It was, I don't know if Wyoming made the cut. It was more Colorado.
We used to have that in Utah.
I loved it.
Yeah.
It was so much fun because I would just set up shop, do my radio show there, and then bring on different coaches and different players, and it was awesome. Well, following UNC, and you and I talked a little bit about this, about updating the roster, which you guys have done phenomenal with, the roster wasn't always updated. So basically, I was told, there's going to be a coach there, and they're going to bring a player, which I was told at the time, whoever was the quarterback. Well, they brought two players. And the second player was Eddie. And I didn't know Eddie face-to-face. So they just basically say, your guys are ready. So they bring them over, have them sit down, do the show. I'm already on the air. And I don't want to embarrass anybody, but I could not think of Eddie's name. Hmm. So, and I've never told Eddie this story. This is a radio trick. So I said, hey, guys, we're on the air. But I said, I know this is weird, but we need to have a mic check right now to make sure your levels are okay. So just say your first and last name. Yeah. And that's how I had Eddie Gonzalez. I'm like, oh gosh, I feel terrible about that. But that was my story with Eddie because I was sweating bullets. And that was relatively early in my radio career. Yeah. So I was like, I don't know this dude's name. I don't want to insult him by saying, who are you? So I just, you know, do a sound check for me. And it worked out for me. And Eddie was awesome from that point on. But great, great dude.
Nice job. Good trick. Jedi'd it.
So if I ever say, hey, coach, give me some mic check, you're going to go, oh, he forgot my name.
Yeah.
Which probably will happen at some point. That's on me. But no, great, great guys. And that's a little bit of a breaker today. Breaking news with Eddie Gonzalez.
It is. Yep.
I'll be rooting for that dude.
Super excited for him. We'll have a celebration party and send him out and be really proud of everything that he can accomplish.
Yeah, I'll be rooting for that guy for sure. Coach, I know we're going to talk about quarterbacks today. I don't know how we've done four different positions, and we haven't talked about quarterback, which is usually the first thing we're talking about.
Yeah, I've done that somewhat on purpose. You know, we talked about theming this discussion around where the program's been built, and it's really, for a foundational developmental program, our highest potential for long-term development was always going to be at the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
And we are at that point now where that is the strength of our football team. I talked about last offseason that was becoming a big strength and that we were built around that. But and it was somewhat true, but we went through a rash of injuries on the offensive line starting in that second game of the year, that CSU game. We lost a starting offensive lineman for three straight games. And you know, I thought we rallied but it's just so difficult sometimes when you haven't built up the depth yet. It's so difficult to pivot and change who you are, but try to have some consistency as well. And we did have to change a little bit who we were, but we're a good 8-9 deep now on the O-line in terms of what I consider winning players, big sky level, winning level players. And then the defensive line as well, probably more than that, 9 to 10 guys for four positions. And then so that's just going to impact the whole rest of the team. To be able to win in the line of scrimmage will impact the rest of the team. So, yeah. So now several weeks later, we can get into quarterbacks, which you've always wanted to talk about.
Always.
Because I know that's where you wanted to start.
That's so where we start.
Thanks for flexing for me.
Well, yeah. And I get it, actually. And it makes sense, even judging by just last season. Quarterback play was important. But your offensive line was even more crucial in that transition because you had quarterback health issues, obviously. You had changes at quarterback. and it seemed like doom and gloom on the outside, and you guys were able to hold it together with a backup quarterback. And that, I think that speaks loudly to your point about how important it is to have an effective offensive line.
Yes. The thing I'm most proud of for last season is the players never lost belief that we could win in any given game. We knew what we were going through as a whole team and as a coaching staff, particularly on offense with the injuries that were going on. But it wasn't like years past where I thought the team had lost belief and then we really try to rally each week. That team last year, I think, really set the tempo for the future, including this coming season, because they always believed that they were going to win that week.
Yeah.
And even though the final scores didn't always show it, anybody can go back and watch like us play against the national champions, Montana State, and that game was 10-0 with like a minute left in the second quarter. We had knocked on the door a few times, and then we gave up a big play right before half, and it ended up being, I think, 17-0 or 17-3, and then we kind of lost track of it. But no lack of belief to win any given game.
Well, Coach, let's kind of just a refresher of the quarterback situation. We'll look at the new names as well. But obviously, it was a weird one for you guys because Peter Castelli was quarterback one going into last season, and then Eric Gibson Jr. backup. Castelli goes down, Gibson comes in, Castelli comes back, you're kind of mixing it there, but then ultimately you're saying it's going to be Eric Gibson going forward, and you were above board with both quarterbacks telling him this is the plan.
Yeah.
Fast forward a little bit, Castelli goes, I want to be the instant starter, I want to go somewhere to play now. So enters the transfer portal. We all know the story of Eric Gibson Jr., how much of a bummer that was. So you guys were kind of delivered this really rare blow when it comes to your quarterback position, because if you had known what the powers that be were ultimately going to decide on Eric Gibson Jr., my guess is you would have said, we're planning on life without you. Peter, you're obviously going to be quarterback number one. And who knows how that would play out now. But it was very odd circumstance.
It was. And so this year, and to lose both those guys now, it completely starts over. And so right now, QB1 is Kenny Liuth. Kenny was with us last year. He originally signed at Northern Illinois and transferred to us last summer. Never quite got going in terms of the offense that we were running at that time. And our offense now is better built for him because he looked like he would have the inside track, and so we wanted to make sure that and use some things that he was really good at. So Kenny's one of the strongest players on our team. He's big. I heard the defensive coordinator Preston Hadley calling him just passing in the hallway the other day. Hey, Kenny Tebow, what's up?
He's jacked.
Yeah, he's jacked up. He's 6'4". He's strong arm. Can make all the throws on the field, stands in the pocket really courageously. That was not Peter Castelli. Peter Castelli, one of the fastest players in the country at any level at quarterback. We wanted to maximize his ability to run the ball at times. Was very good at the RPO. Thrived a little bit more in a spread offense. Kenny will thrive a little bit more as in a more condensed offense. Still the same play calls, still consistency in our offense, but there are small tweaks that you can do to tilt something in their favor. And so we were always, for a long time, we were developing the offense around Peter Castelli, and that somewhat helped with Eric Gibson too, who got a different skill set, but it was similar in that Eric kind of thrived in the precision passing game, spread out offense.
So here on March 4th, Kenny's the guy to beat.
That's right.
Now. Okay.
Yep. And I always have to explain it like that could change this afternoon.
Yeah.
And Kenny understands.
So
that
you don't
too.
Want me to tweet out the quarterback of the future is going to be.
You could do that.
I've learned my lesson with that stuff.
When people say like, who's going to start on Saturday? Like if we had zero practices and minutes between now and Saturday, I could tell you that, but anything can happen in that time. So And then Levi Durrell is kind of taking up the second team reps right now. He's familiar with the offense. He's a great leader. Another big and strong guy who has a lot of skill set. And was our backup last year after Peter went down. So it was Eric and then Levi. He didn't get a lot of game action, but he took a lot of practice reps and understands things. Great team guy, great culture guy. We knew that we would in having a new starter with little or no UNC game experience, we wanted to also bring in some other options to compete. And so Brayton Silbor from Southwest College in San Diego brought him in he's got just 1 year left. He's been a JC guy now. Got a lot of starts under his belt, but at the JC level, he's built a lot like Kenny and Levi. And so we wanted to make sure and kind of keep that going so that the theme of the offense, we could cater toward that. One guy that kind of I would say we went and looking for his type of player, but couldn't pass him up when we found him available is Keegan Patterson. He's one of the better Colorado players to come out of Colorado and quarterback in a long time, but he went to Indiana State and just for his senior year was looking to come to UNC. He's got friends here now. He can kind of see what we're doing. He wanted to play back closer to home for his final season. And Keegan is a lot more like a Peter Castelli. He's really, really strong, thrives a little bit more in a spread offense and can really hurt teams with his legs. Great scrambler, great competitor, fantastic leader, as you might imagine. I haven't been a starter at the FCS level, very experienced. Feel really lucky to have Keegan Patterson in the program right now. But he just came in January, and so he's trying to work his way up the depth chart, and we'll see what happens there. But a great addition for us. Gavin Lockett from Southern Colorado, he'll be going into his second year this year. Third spring practice because he was an early graduate. Credit to him and the way that he works and strong academic student. But he's, again, kind of along that same mode, a really fast sub-1100-meter guy in high school. And he would be more of the runner type, or at least that's a real one of his top dangers to the opponent. And then we go to the new guys that we signed that aren't here yet, but Caden Reeder and Zeke Andrews, both local Colorado kids, great high school seniors this year, a lot of honors. They won a lot of honors, both of them. Caden was a little more late developing in high school. And then Zeke was, I think everybody could see that coming, that he would be one of the top athletes in the state. Zeke's like 6'5", and right now 200 pounds, but he could be 250 by the time it's all done. We won't try to push him to that.
Yeah.
If he stays at QB, and we have every intention of keeping him at QB, giving him an opportunity to continue to develop there. But those are two young freshmen that we're really excited about. And then we didn't have really room in the class for another freshman because, we have all these kind of seniors and then we have two freshmen. You don't want to get too overloaded on the same class. So we had an opportunity for Jacob Paisano from California, Hart High School, California. And we ended up delaying his first enrollment to next January. So okay. We'll be able to separate his year from, from Caden and Zeke. At least with eligibility, he'll have one more year of eligibility, and that'll help us balance out that QB roster a little bit.
All right, so the theme I'm getting here is big, strong quarterbacks, pretty good in the pocket, maybe not first instinct is to take off and run, at least quarterback 1 through 3, and that's just based off who you mentioned 1 through 3, not the actual depth chart. And then on down the list, we have kind of it starts to evolve into something else where we're having more guys that maybe it's obviously still throw first, but the run option is certainly there.
All three of the freshmen, those guys are all much more like Kenny Liuth, Levi Durrell, Brayton Silbor, pro style quarterback, so to speak. It, whether they can run well or not, whether they're 4.5, 4.6, 40 guys or not, they're all tall and can stand in the pocket and see over the line and can thrive in more of a condensed offense. But But then, you know, when you talk about Keegan and Gavin, if Keegan Patterson and Gavin Lockett, if those guys start to rise up the depth chart, then we will, you know, we will develop the offense around them, and they're going to be advantaged. The more spread out we can get the defense, the more advantages that they will have. So we want to have a system that can flex a little bit in both directions so that everybody can compete, especially this time of year.
Well, and you proved that this offensive line, which we've really got into a lot of detail there a couple weeks ago, this offensive line, I think one of the more difficult things to do is for a line to transition from pocket passer to guy that can get out and run.
Right.
And your line proved to do that. So that's something where there's a lot of confidence in what your method is here. If you end up going with more of a true pocket passer or make a transition to a running style quarterback then or a mobile quarterback, then you know your line can handle it.
On your show, when Denver was making their run in the playoffs and lost their starter, lost Bo, I mentioned that the struggle that they were going to have with the second quarterback because he was different in that he couldn't escape. And the offensive line were used to Bo Nix escaping and creating and running sideways in the pocket, getting first downs on pass plays that broke down. And then I just knew they were doomed. Like, you have bad weather, you have more of a pocket passer coming in, and then, you know, he took that early sack and threw another one, interception under pressure. And I was just like, man, if they could go back in time and jump to the third quarterback, mm-hmm. who's not a great passer by NFL standards, but he can run, can you just create 17 points and win that game in the bad weather, you know, by scrambling around and doing it Tim Tebow's way back in the
I was thinking about you on that too, watching the game. I'm like, wow, because Jarrett Stidham, he was just so, especially in the second half, with that snow, it was just, both quarterbacks were just ineffective, but it would have been nice to have a guy that's like, I'm just going to take off and make something happen.
Exactly.
And he didn't have that.
Yeah, the defense has a tough time when the weather gets like that, and the field gets slick, because offense knows where they're going, and defense has to react. And so if you can get the ball just moving, advancing north and south, you have a good chance. But the idea of kind of like completing passes up and down the field, it just, that's the recipe for disaster in that kind of weather.
Yeah, what do you do? I mean, in that game, they're just punting back and forth. It's all about field position, and you just hope something happens, I guess. You just hope there's some kind of crazy turnover. The ball bounces a weird way.
Yeah, and they could have won. Like, they did a nice job coaching, and then the decision to go for it, we're getting way off on a tangent here, but like,
it's quarterbacks.
Yeah, the decision to go for it, I thought was a good one, because, you know, had they scored a touchdown in that situation, it could have been almost an insurmountable lead. But yeah, in the end, it's just the illustration that I'm trying to make is I understand, especially recently, with our experience at UNC, I understand how difficult it is to transition from one type of a quarterback to another in the middle of the season. And it's not really that the coaches don't have the experience. I mean, come on, like, Sean Payton has worked with every type of quarterback there is. Like, he understands a running quarterback. I mean, he worked with Taysom Hill, who's a friend and a guy that I coached at BYU, right? Like, so he understands the value of putting a runner in there that's a runner first and a passer second. But to transition that quickly from a runner like Nix to a passer like Stidham, it's hardest on the players, the receivers who are used to having an extra moment to get open, the offensive line who's used to just staying on a block but not necessarily protecting a pocket. Just, hey, Nix will find a hole, you just stay on your guy. Like, that's how they've been successful all season. And then all of a sudden, okay, now we have to set up this clean pocket. That's a kind of just a different feel, different timing.
In a perfect world, or I guess, give me your perfect quarterback. Would you rather have, and they're both, let's say they're both elite at what they specialize in. One guy can sit in that pocket, go through every progression. It's just seamless and makes all the throws. Or you have a guy that can make pretty good throws, but man, he's electric. You can't stop the guy, and he's wonderful throwing on the run. What's your favorite style of quarterback if they were both really good at their given craft? This is a tough one.
That is really difficult. I just don't see it in that way, because it
yours is like, who's winning? You know, who's getting me the dub?
If they're effective in one area, and then the coach can build around that, then all the other players can succeed, you know. But I think I will say this. The most available sorry about that. Like I pulled out my cord there.
You got excited talking quarterbacks, man.
The most available quarterback to us in the current recruiting, everybody is pretty enamored with the mobile quarterback right now. I think there are a lot of really good quarterbacks that 10 years ago would have gone. I think all three of the freshmen that we signed, Zeke Andrews, Caden Reeder, and Jacob Paisano, I think they would have all been Power 4 type signees 10 years ago before the portal and then before everyone was looking for the runner.
Yeah.
And so the game will evolve back. You're already seeing it in the NFL. You're seeing more condensed formations. You're seeing teams not rely as much on RPOs, not rely as much on quarterbacks scrambling around. Some of those quarterbacks have suddenly dropped off, the mobile quarterbacks, like, you know, Kyler Murray, even Patrick Mahomes. Like, you see some of the drop-off there because defenses are now adjusting, going to more two-high stuff, going to more QB spies. They're mm-hmm. not letting the quarterback run around forever. And so now the cycle of football seems to be going back toward the pocket passer.
Yeah. Yeah, who can just kind of pick apart a defense there. That's really interesting, too. On Caden Reeder, now watching, and all the highlights are always going to be highlights. They're not lowlights. There were a couple of times where he got out of some situations. I think he ran like a 4.7 40 or something, 4.8. Yeah. But he suddenly looked fast. So it was one of those things where maybe like under duress, this guy could move a little bit. So that'll be interesting to see how he progresses as a quarterback with you guys.
Oh, there are absolutely, there are pocket passers that can still run. Like, I'll go back to answer your question a few moments ago. Give me Steve Young.
Yeah.
Who was a precision passer, passed for a very high rate, but he
could cook.
He ran physically, he ran fast. Like, Steve, and, you know, same alma mater, I've had the chance
to golf
with Steve Young a few times. Great guy and just amazing, amazing quarterback for the ability to do both at a high level. Just, it doesn't happen very often.
Yeah, one of the best to do it. So basically, Caden Reeder is going to be Steve Young. Is that
sure.
is that yeah. roundabout way? Well, the reason I'm interested in that is because I remember asking you, and this was several weeks ago, when you could neither confirm nor deny that he was. So I reached out to him and I got him on the show. And I just thought it was funny because somebody said he had a certain play and they said laser speed. Which isn't, he even joked it. And I said, so your new nickname is Laser, right? Because he put it on his social media handle. And it was funny because he's not known for that, but in a pinch, he could kind of move. So, and I had talked to you on the podcast and said, how realistic is it that guy sees some playing time? And at that point, I think you said, you know, decent shot. And then to hear today, which tells us how this evolves throughout the year already, is, you've kind of got him down the list a little bit.
Yeah, because he's not even on campus yet.
Right.
You know what I mean? And same with Zeke. Like, so I say this in recruiting every time these recruits are in my office. Look, I want to maximize you. Here's what I see as your highest potential at UNC. You can count on me maximizing you. You're going to commit to us. You're going to sign with us. I commit these things back to you. But I always make sure and say, but I'm doing that for every guy in your position group.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to maximize everybody all at once. So it's really hard for me to talk about the upside of a Caden Reeder without saying, don't forget about Jacob Paisano, don't forget about Zeke Andrews, and don't read into the order that I bring them up at any given time.
I know. You make this so difficult because that's what I'm trying to do here with these. But it's also great because, if you were sitting here on March 4th without seeing some of these guys on campus and you're like, that guy's going to be the dude, probably would be a disservice to several other quarterbacks that are there at this point.
Absolutely. And there's so much that goes into it. Staying healthy, not just injury-wise, but like not getting sick. That's a big one. Guys that don't recover, spend time to recover, treat their body right, eat right, and then, you know, are kind of sickly and miss a day or two a month, they get behind.
Yeah.
And so there are so many variables for who is going to be the guy of the future that it's really hard to sit here at this time before they've ever even set foot on campus and made all the adjustments that they're going to have to make from high school life, living under their parents' roof, to, you know, trying to find a system of recovery and training and learning in a dorm room.
Well, I'm going to get this depth chart at some point, Coach. Yeah. We do a segment on our Rocky Mountain College kickoff show we do in the fall, and it's all things the teams we cover on that show. And at the end of the program, we would always, okay, we each get to pick a player we think is going to be the star performer between UNC, CSU, Wyoming, Air Force, CU. And yours was always the most difficult when it came to those skill players because we couldn't pick the same player twice. We had to pick a new player every week. Mm. And yours picking running backs was always difficult because it was like, man, on any given Saturday, one of these dudes is going to have a good game, and the guy that had a good game the week before might not do it so much, which was also what defenses were thinking. So you had us stumped. Can't imagine what you had with some of these defenses, man. It's easy to have us stumped, but it happened every week.
We would like to get there. That's been an issue for us, at running back in particular. We would like to get there where this is the guy, and we say it to the whole position group and the whole team, this is our guy. This is RB1.
Yeah.
A multitude of obstacles have gotten in our way of doing that. So I definitely can relate to the challenge that we've put in front of you.
I want you to be thinking about that. How do I make the guy's job a little bit easier when it comes to star performer?
The pick'ems.
The pick'ems and everything. Coach, always appreciate you, man. Next week, if we have some time, I do want to talk to you about potential portal changes. The NCAA, they're throwing out a lot of possible punishments if teams are taking a player outside of the portal window. Meaning right now, you can enter the portal, then the portal window can close, but you can still get on a team. Now they're wanting to maybe punish teams if they take those players. So I want to get your thoughts on that maybe coming up next week.
I have one major thought that I shared right away. But I can, if you want, we can leave that as a cliffhanger.
I think that we leave that as a cliffhanger.
Because I'm going to illustrate some stupidity.
Okay. Yeah. Next week, let's illustrate some
Hopefully
stupidity.
Hopefully not my own.
Well, I do it every day. Yeah. The more you talk, the more you let stuff
me
out.
Too.
Always appreciate you, my friend. And we'll look forward to that conversation next week.
Thank you.